When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Newcastle Natter. My name is Fergus Craig and I'm joined by Paul Doolan.
Hello.
And Dave Watson.
Hi, Fergus.
Hi, how guys. Are you? I'm all right. A little bit stressed by technological issues that we've been having. Don't really want to talk about it. Been doing this podcast. Me and Paul realised the other day that I've been doing this podcast for nearly 10 years.
Bloody
and it
hell.
Is still, I'd like to say, the longest running Newcastle podcast at this standard of professionalism.
Yeah. Not many people longest stick it out running at this level.
to stick out with a podcast for 10 years and at no stage to think about ever coming up with any features, ever coming up with any schedule, ever sorting out anyone buying a fucking microphone. No, we're just going to do this for 10 years.
I don't think we're not doing this for growth, are we? This is basically
we're actively shunning the fame and riches that having a professionally run fan podcast could provide. We had a podcast platform get in touch with us fairly recently and ask if we wanted to join them with promises of professionalism and blah, blah, blah. We just said, no, we're going to continue to record our social lives and enforce it on the few hundred people who have chosen it out of some kind of curious masochism. to have it as part of their lives. So,
God love you.
Well, we'll carry on with the only format we've ever had, which is let's talk about the most recent game, the most recent football match that Newcastle United played. As I just quickly opened a tab to remind myself, was against Brentford. I think out of the three of us, Dave, you saw the most of the game. I caught most of it. Some of it whilst having an argument with my girlfriend about oven space on Christmas Day. Dave, what were your overall impressions of the Brentford game?
It was exactly the best and worst of the expectation of how Eddie Howe's football was going to be under Newcastle. The attack was much improved. There was much more energy. We were on the ball more. It was entertaining, for fuck's sake. But the defence was a shambles, which is the big concern. I think if we're still in touch come January and we can buy some new defenders, we'll be all right if we can play that way consistently. I thought there were some really, really impressive performances. Like Shelvey, I give him a lot of stick, but I thought it was his best game. Fuck, maybe 2 years.
Shelvey massively bigged up by Eddie Howe in the build-up to the match.
Mm. And
that would to I'm sure the surprise of some fans, but
definitely me, yeah.
Yeah, and he got a start, and Eddie Howe sort of gave the impression that he wanted to build the team around him.
I thought he was really good. I thought that new Brazilian that we've signed,
Yeah.
He looks all right, doesn't he? I mean, he's much better than the old one we had.
Well, to be fair to Joe Linton, you could make the case that he's been our best player this season. Certainly one of our best players. He's been a lot better, which is not saying much for a side that hasn't won a match all season, but he's probably in his best period of inverted commas form.
I think he's improved this season, but Saturday was his best game by a country mile. I think he was our man of the match.
Yeah.
That seems to be the consensus.
Definitely. I think because I've heard a couple of different people that he in the summer he went to work on his fitness and work with analysts, and he's been doing a lot more like away from the training ground. He's been studying how to better his game, and the analyst that he was using when it was announced that it was going to be Eddie Howe taking over as manager directed the advice and the suggestions and the training and stuff like that that he's doing outside of the training ground to fit the kind of football that Eddie Howe plays. And I think you saw that in the game because he was holding the ball up. He was, I mean, at stages he was directing play for St Maximum's equaliser. When the ball went up to Fraser, Joe Linton was telling Murphy to go beyond Fraser to like drag a defender out of the way so that Fraser had a more space to put in a cross. And I've never seen Joe Linton do anything but either fall over, which he did a couple of times, or like, I don't know, just simple stuff. He never really seemed to have an understanding of the way that he was supposed to be playing. But in that game, definitely did. I thought he was really impressive.
It reminds me so much of Schola. I'm sure there's many differences, but there are a lot of things that remind me with Joe Linton about Schola. Just, I think he's a lot better when he's instinctive. Like the goal that he scored was very quick and instinctive. The chance he had at the end, which was a really good chance, and maybe he just lost his footing, and anyone could have lost their footing, but it did feel very Joe Linton, and it was an unbelievable run by St Maximin to create it. But Joe Linton of a year or so ago might have not even kept up with play and been in the box, but he was there. Mm. But like the fact that he had a second to think about it and think about possibly the pressure just reminded me of the way Shola Amiobi was. When any time he had a chance to think about things, he tended to fuck it up. But instinctively, he was actually quite a good player. And anyway, I'll let Paul speak. Paul, what would you like to say?
I agree with all of that. I think you're both doing a marvellous job.
Sorry, Paul.
No, I think what was most encouraging for me is how often we had like at least three players in their box. I think that is something that's not happened for the last 4 years. He's like Joe Linton's goal, or what, six of them in the box? I think players being played in their right position and everyone just playing further up the field, it felt like a brand new team in some ways. I think defensively we were poor, but actually, that should have been a 3-1 game. The deflection for the third goal was unlucky, really. And Darlow for the fourth, it was such a... That was just a fuck-up, really.
Yeah. I think the other things you have to consider is that Wilson had a couple of decent opportunities. Joe Linton had two really, really good chances, and both times he slipped. We were creating a lot. I think we had something like 23, 24 shots, and like 9 or 10 of those were on target. I can't remember Fernandez making too many saves. I mean, that one off the line from Wilson when their keeper, Fernandez, when he dropped the cross from the corner and it fell at Wilson's feet and he scuffed it and it just happened to hit Ivan Toney. We genuinely we could have comfortably won that game. Like you say, like 3-1, 4-5-1. There were so many chances and good chances, and that's not something we've seen recently.
Ivan Toney was good, wasn't he? Sold him for a few hundred grand. We sold Ivan Toney. And he seemed like he had a lot to prove. You know those players who refused to celebrate at the other club or whatever? He was definitely not one of them players. He was a player who sat in Newcastle for 3 years or whatever it was, every now and again going out on loan and thinking, I am a good fucking player. Why am I not getting a chance here? And he's gone and proved himself at other places. And he's got a lot.
He's
very pleased to score against us.
He looks kind of tailor-made for the Premier League. And you think of, I think in that era, Hossaloo was getting in ahead of him. Is that right?
Yeah.
It was when we had no strikers. He still couldn't get a look in. I think he's got a fair case to feel aggrieved.
I think he does. But then the other thing that you have to consider is that at the time, perhaps he needed a season or two playing Championship football to increase his physicality, to learn the game a bit more so that he could become the striker that he is now.
Maybe, and but then like, we sold him for a few hundred grand, so it's clear that we didn't rate him.
Well, I think
it's more an indictment of our loan system or our lack of a loan manager at the time. Ironically, our loan manager is now Scholler, the the Brazilian, no, the Jordi Jelinton.
But the thing is, it's not just a simple case of, well, we think he's not going to be good enough, so we're just going to sell him for a couple of hundred grand. It's also, we can't afford to have somebody developing. We need somebody now, and that's why we got him off our books. It's the same with Adam Armstrong. Adam Armstrong, he's not really tearing it up in the Premier League, but he's a good striker and now, but we just couldn't afford to give him the game time or pay the wages of somebody who's not fit for the first team.
I think that's always the case. There are very few football clubs who are not desperate for points, and it always takes a risk to play a young player, and sometimes it goes wrong and sometimes it goes right. And my hindsight suggests we probably got it wrong on Toney and Armstrong.
Just very quickly, you compare playing a striker who is progressing or like developing to like a central midfielder, and I think it's easier for a central midfielder learning his trade to get the minutes and stuff than it is for a striker, because if a striker's not scoring goals, he's not doing his job, whereas a midfielder can be busy, can be tidy, doesn't have to be, you know, setting the world alight.
Reminder that he was competing with Hossaloo. So
Hossaloo, who's now doing really well.
I think another one we let go is also doing really well. Mitrovic is already over 20 goals for the season in the Championship, which is insane. That's just 20 league goals as well. That's not all competitions. It's mad. He could get 50 goals a season if he carries on it that way.
So there's more to say about the Brentford game, but I think we should probably have a quick break now, and then we will speak more about the Brentford game and the picture in general. All right.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, something that's less Mr. Bean and more Steve McQueen, check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
Welcome back to the Newcastle Natter. So, this was Eddie Howe's first game managing the side, but he managed it from a hotel room. Is there a case to be made that all football managers, football games should be managed from hotel rooms now, Paul?
I think if you
look see, isolating, he was, go on, Paul.
If you're looking for a point, he's proved that can be done from a hotel room. Yeah. I think if he got the win, it might have become like a superstition where he'd have to have done every game from that hotel room.
What we know is that he was isolating, so he was definitely on his own. So there's a pretty strong chance that he could be the first football manager in history to have made a decision during the game whilst taking a shit.
Yeah.
That's possible. Whilst also watching Holmes Under the Hammer.
Whilst playing football manager.
That would have been a power play.
There are any number of possibilities. I imagine, after a game like that, there's a lot of adrenaline. But then he's just in his hotel room. What did he do?
So it feels like
what do men who are all pumped up and on their own in hotel rooms do?
He probably just watched BBC News and had a nap.
I don't know.
Do you think Eddie Howe's a BBC News?
Say that again?
Do you think Eddie Howe's a BBC News guy? Do you reckon he...
What do you think?
I don't think he's ITV. I think he might be a Channel 4 news guy.
I think maybe Sky News.
That's probably true. Yeah, he probably just has Sky Sports News on, doesn't he?
Probably. In a hotel. In a hotel.
So coming into the role.
Thank you.
Coming into the role as manager, he would have been up to speed on the kind of season we were having. I would have thought there were two different ways you could go. We were conceding a lot of goals. We're showing some ability going forward. We were scoring more goals than we had done previously. I think you could probably make the case that we have a mid-table attack and it might be flattering to say a championship defence at the moment. Because there's two ways you could go. You could focus all your energies on shoring up the defence, getting them working in a very organised way, and concentrate on not conceding goals, or you could just go attack, and that appears to have been what he went for, right, Paul?
Yeah, but I think again the result makes that look like a worse tactic than it actually was because of the nature of the goals we conceded. I think if we try and shore up at the back, based on the way we've tried to do that this season, we still concede those sloppy goals. I think if Dubravka starts that game, it's an easy victory. And our strongest players are all attacking players. And we showed, I think we looked fairly balanced. I think we've looked more open at the back when we've tried to set up defensively because we've gone behind and then had to throw the kitchen sink at it without any kind of tactical discipline. It's a tough one because everyone around us at the bottom won. It looks like a worse result than it was. I think Brentford at home is a game every team in the league will be looking to get 3 points from. I think our performance was good enough for 3 points. I think it was just individual errors that you would hope will start to get ironed out.
There's also something weird psychological going on, right? There's some kind of thing that we've had all season where we've gone ahead quite early and then conceded quite quickly. That there's something going on there, right, Dave?
Yeah, that's a concentration issue. I think, like Paul says, if Dubravka starts that game, he doesn't make Darlow's error, and then if we don't immediately concede, I don't think we would... I think we would have gone on to win the game. I think that immediate... Because it killed the crowd, it will have got all those all that nervousness that's been in our game for 2 years, it would have, that would have crept in again immediately as soon as Tony hit, put the ball in the back of the net. There will have been naturally the, oh, fuck, here we go again, rather than the, we've just scored, they've had a shot, Dubravka saved it, let's keep going. And the crowd would have got picked them up and all the rest of it. I think I said it on Twitter that getting this attack playing well, it's a quick and easy fix, really. Just giving them a bit more instruction, a bit more freedom, a bit more, like, in the way that you set up, a bit more support. Sorting out that defence, like you say, that championship defence, that is a long, long, fucking difficult task. And it would take a really good defensive manager weeks of playing professional games to sort out that back line. Eddie Howe's not a defensive manager, so it'll take him, I would guess, even longer. I think we're going to have to wait until we get new bodies in to see a better defence. So until that happens, fuck it. Attack, attack, attack.
Sure, but we're going to have to score a lot of goals. I mean, we've scored in every game, every Premier League game this season, bar two. So scoring goals has not been our problem. So, I mean, it could get exciting. We might, you know, we're not going to have, it's clear that at the moment, it's unlikely that we're going to win many games 1-0, but maybe we'll win some 4-3. We'll have to see. Is there anything in particular that we'd like to say about the Brentford game?
The only other thing is I was expecting us to go 4 at the back based on that's what Howe's done all his career. And I feel like that's what we've got the personnel for. But I wonder if it was just too soon for sort of... Feels like there's doubt over whether we have the fullbacks for playing a back four, which I think is a bit harsh on Mankio. But I wonder if the international break sort of made his mind up as well, because only Cher, who'd been away on international duty, started the game. Almiron stayed on the bench. Jamal Lewis, who I think we've all got hopes will improve and replace Matt Ritchie at some point soon. I wonder if it's just not having enough time at training with him. But I think Matt Ritchie, you would have to say, was probably slightly at fault for at least the second goal. And even on the first one, he just looks like he's being dragged in three different directions. Which,
well, it seems, I mean, like, if you're playing four at the back, well, if you're playing four at the back and both our fullbacks are only really in the starting lineup for their attacking abilities.
Yeah.
And you're our side and you're in a relegation battle, that doesn't seem like a sustainable situation.
Especially when the centre of the park, we've got two central midfielders whose first instinct is to attack, is to move forward. I think if you have Hayden in there, he can provide a little bit more cover for when Richie or Murphy goes forward. So we pretty much were playing with three defenders, and at best, Cher is a lower Premier League defender, the other two pure championship. I mean, Lascelles, he was at fault for one of the goals at least, and he was getting dragged out of position. And I think he reminds me of Stephen Taylor. He gets the occasion gets to him, and he gets a rush of blood to the head, and he just goes off and does stupid things.
What? Well, he got two goals.
He really reminds me of Stephen Taylor. But yeah, even I see what you're saying about having. Yeah. I see what you're saying about Hayden, but that's doing a bit of cover. But whatever happens, if you've got fullbacks who aren't fullbacks, there are going to be opportunities for them to be skinned.
Yeah.
A holding midfielder can't prevent. You know, there's going to be Matt Ritchie not stopping crosses coming in, and the same for Murphy. You know.
Yeah. I think I was meaning more just that there were quite a few times where just one pass took out our entire team, and it was always down into that into one of the corners. Whereas if you've got Hayden providing a bit of cover, then that area can be occupied at the very least.
I'm with you. So we're now in a situation where our next game is away at Arsenal. I think most of us would say, you know, there are possibilities to get something out of that, but you'd have to make them favourites to win that game. But after that, we've got a midweek game against Norwich at home, followed by a game at home against Burnley. None of the new money is in yet, apart from the manager. There's no new signings. But you really have to hope that if we're going to get out of this relegation situation, you have to hope we're going to get something out of Norwich and Burnley, right?
Yeah, I think we have to be looking for... I mean, it's too early to sort of say we're adrift, but two wins from the next three games would make it feel a lot more safe. Or even 4 points in the next three games is something to build on. But you look at the running we've got coming up in December. I think we've got, Man City, Liverpool, Leicester, although Leicester doesn't look like the tough game it did particularly before. Man U, it's hard to know how tough that'll be now with their constant changes. But you would think Burnley and Norwich, we have to be getting something from.
Yeah.
I don't think we can't keep picking up 1 point against the teams around us at the bottom.
Regardless of when
they're both having an upturn in form, aren't they? Go on, Dave.
Regardless of when those fixtures fall in the calendar, for a team like us, we have to be picking up points from them. What is, I don't know, gives me some cause for optimism is that Eddie Howe's Bournemouth often took points off the bigger teams because his team wasn't afraid to play football against them. Whereas quite often teams like Man U will come up against a rigid, solid, packed defence and grind out a win. But when they come up against teams that actually play football, they're not used to it. So maybe.
Sure, but alternatively, I mean, that was what Rafa did for us, was he got points out of those big games by doing exactly that, not playing any football at all.
Yeah.
Bedford Magnus, there's two different ways of doing it. But yeah, we could get some points in some places at some point. It would be nice to see us win. We're currently the only league side in English football without a win.
I think it does look like a really good relegation battle this season. Like you would say that apart from us, there's no one you think of as like the whipping boys, really. Norwich have won two in a row now. I think a lot of people still don't expect us to go down just because of the takeover. There's a lot of teams you could even see as high up as sort of Brighton getting dragged into it.
Yeah,
I think it's a privilege to be involved. speaking of relegation, Bedford Mag says, with some marked improvements of the weekend, what percentage are we now at for going down? I forget where we were last time we asked this question, each of us, in this, but, you know.
I think I'm constantly hovering around 40.
Yeah, I'm still about 50-50. Fergus doesn't have an opinion.
I would say I'm at about 50-50. It's too soon. Yeah. Too soon to be more specific than that.
Yeah. I think one thing I just wanted to say is that because the window opens in January, and actually we've got a decent run of games early in the new year where I could see an improved Newcastle United, a strengthened Newcastle United, picking up quite a few points because we've got like Southampton, Watford, although they look decent, Leeds, Everton, Villa, West Ham, Brentford, Brighton. It's only really when you get into March where we face Chelsea. You've got a good run of fixtures there where you could pick up a lot of points and then suddenly it looks a lot rosier. So I think you were saying it on a previous pod, if we're still in touch, like if we're still like 5 points from safety, by the time we get to January, I don't think that's I still think we've got a decent chance, but it's just, can we stay in touch and can we strengthen?
I think January is going to be interesting. Right. So I think any big, big player who's willing to come to us if we're in the relegation zone, I would say immediately disqualifies himself from being the sort of person we want because it just smacks of a payday, no ambition. I think if we are cut adrift, we're going to have to make some really good loan signings. But the thing with that is the new Santiago Munoz takes up one of our loan slots, and you only really get two, don't you? So I think we either have to get rid of or permanently sign him to bring in two decent loan players, which is where I think we'd be able to get our sort of marquee signings.
But I wonder with Santiago Munoz, is it not that you're only allowed to name in your squad of 25 a couple of loans, and you're allowed, I think you're allowed two domestic loans and a couple of foreign loans as well. So I don't think you can only have two. I think
I'm not sure if that's the same anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case,
none of us know exactly what we're talking about. So research this. If you're listening to this and you're interested in the answer, go find it out. So,
go fuck yourselves.
So it does give another incentive as a club to try and peel ourselves off that bottom place in the league. Because if we are bottom of the league in January, Paul makes a good point. What sort of player is going to want to come to us? No matter how big we are in theory now, we're still the bottom side of the league. And if you're going to come to a side who there is a very strong chance will be spending next season in the Championship, and you are a player of big pedigree, then why the fuck are you coming to us?
And you're not going to be doing it to get in the World Cup squad.
You know, there aren't, we're not even in a situation where there's any, like,
sorry, carry on, Virgil.
There could be some players who you would assume if they're good, then there'll be other sides out for them as well. But
I mean. When we're in the bottom, I don't think you're going to come to Newcastle to sort of try and work your way into the World Cup squad. So I think we need to be 17th or 18th to be able to attract the sort of players that can take us up further.
I think it totally depends on like where what the table looks like, because if we're 18th, 19th, 20th, but we're 3 points off 16th, then of course somebody would come to it. If we're 20th and we have 12 points between us and safety, then no, fucking nobody's going to come. But then I think that would alter our approach to the January window, because I think at that point you go, right, let's sign some young players who will do well in the Championship and get us straight back up.
We'll see. But I mean, maybe it'll, when it comes down to it, then a mercenary, it will do a job for us anyway. You know, they'll be good. They'll be good enough to win us some points.
To be honest, there are examples of players who are purely mercenary coming into a side, and whatever level that team is at, just coming in, doing a job, and then fucking off at the end of the season. And everybody's happy because they may be mercenary, but they've done the job, so who gives a shit? Like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he only went Man U to earn a shit ton of money and play at the top end of the game. And he came in and he scored goals and was good and then fucked off. So
I think under the last manager,
play at the top end of the game.
I think under the last manager, that sort of signing is more likely. But it seems like under Howe and the work rate expected in training, I don't think we'd be bringing in that type of character. But it's interesting. I think there's a level. There's players like Aaron Ramsey who I think are that level, who we could attract on loan, who would do a good job and wouldn't just be sort of turning up, doing a few tricks and then fucking off.
Well, we'll see. We will see. So I guess we'll let's just predict the Arsenal game.
Oh, I'm going to the Arsenal game.
Oh, yeah, you are going to the Arsenal game. Paul, can I come?
Afraid not.
Why didn't you take out one of the other people that you're going with? Take them out. Yeah.
I mean, that happened last year. It's the same person again. Someone I work with has a box at Arsenal.
Ooh.
It's very fancy. So me and Fergus went last year because he had a bit of a cold. So, I mean, it's up to you, Fergus. You have to go and give him some sort of illness. I can't do it all for you.
Sure. Well, I'll try. Yeah, I'd like to go. But, you know, there we are. So what's your prediction of the score, Paul?
I mean, was it 4-0 they lost to Liverpool?
Yeah.
I think 3-2, but I don't know who to.
Dave?
Yeah, I'm like genuinely exactly the same. 3-2, but I don't know which way. I'll say to them. I'll say 3-2 to them.
I think they'll win 3-1. I think Liverpool are amazing and can do that to nearly any side in football. I think Arsenal probably seem like they were getting something together, and that may continue when they play us again. But
I would say it's the first time in a while I've had sort of hope going into these games against the bigger teams. But like Dave was saying before, Harry's track record against the bigger teams does suggest we'll at least try and go toe-to-toe to them. There's been a lot of games we've had where the opposition have had an off day and we've still lost. Whereas I think the way we'll be setting up, if they're having a proper off day, like Watford against Man U, we'll be actually going for it and anything could happen.
The last time we went to watch Newcastle Arsenal at the Emirates, who was that player we had? We had him on loan. Well, we had Danny Rose. And we had, who did we have, like,
was right, it the midfielder who used to be at Spurs?
What, Bentaleb?
Yeah.
No, not Bentaleb. We had Bentaleb. This guy from, like, Inter Milan or something. This guy was Lazaro. Like, really quick. Lazaro. Yeah. Doesn't remember him. He'll be a good question to bring up when we do our sporadic Natter quizzes.
He's one of those people that occasionally pops up on my Twitter feed. I think, why am I still following this person who's now playing at like Venezia or wherever?
Yeah, I followed Mehdi Abid, who like tweeted exclusively in French or Arabic for about 10 years. I was like, why am I following Mehdi Abid? Yeah, Lazaro. I think he was so quickly forgotten.
Yeah.
Anyway.
With good reason, I would say.
With good reason, yeah. We had some time.
And then just wanted to quickly.
Right, well, let's
say as well, haven't we?
Go on, Dave.
Well, two say things.
Again,
one.
Paul? Come on, whatever. Come on, Dave, you take over.
Two things. Charnley's gone. He's been at the club for like 20 odd years.
Yeah.
He's finally gone. I'd be fascinated to see where he's going to end up. And I also think that an interview with him, like a proper deep dive interview from The Athletic or somebody, would be fascinating. And the other thing is, we've got Norwich on Tuesday. And for that game, I fancy us to win. I think we'll get our first or second win of the season against Norwich.
Well, I hope so. Dean Smith has already beaten us 2-0 once this season. Paul, do you want to have a prediction for the Norwich game?
I think 2-0 as.
I think 2-1, but yeah.
The other thing, we talked about Michael Emenalo the other week. He seems to be getting closer to becoming our director of football. I was listening to I can't remember what podcast it was now. But they were talking about Michael Emenalo's history at Chelsea. And there seems to be a lot of debate around how much he actually did and how much other people were responsible for a lot of the good stuff that happened at Chelsea. And you look at where he went next and the fact he lasted about a year and then was left by mutual consent after doing pretty much nothing is slightly worrying.
Yeah, you can't tell though.
He doesn't want to know that. He doesn't want to know. No, I've already decided he's good.
I've decided he's good because that would be good.
My thing was just going to be that with directors of football, there's so many factors involved, like how involved the owner is, how much of a fuss the manager kicks up, how broad his powers are, and all of these fucking things. So he might have an ego the size of Tennessee, but he might also be very good at it. And so I'll judge him on what he does if he comes, and if he doesn't come, then he was clearly shit.
I just think he sounds like a guy who would be on Jules Holland.
And Michael Avenala!
Sounds right. Nice. Sounds right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's leave it there. We might as well bring this shit show to a close. thank you, Dave Watson.
Thanks, Fergus.
Thank you, Paul Doolan.
Thank you.
And thank you to you, the Newcastle and Natter listener. Goodbye.
Bye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk. Sports Social Podcast Network.